of that 590 show coming at you live right now on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com. Matt Berger and Matt Rocchio alongside John G. Monty Rudolph behind the dials. Joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line is our good friend Howard Balzer. You can read him at BalzerFootball.com, hear him on the Hall of Fame show on the NFL channel on Sirius XM, and of course follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. Howard, how are you?
Doing well, Matthews. How you guys doing?
Good. It's been, what, 2-3 weeks, I think?
Something like that, yeah. Well, holiday 1 week, and I don't remember what the deal was last week.
Yeah, you just sent me a text saying that you couldn't do it on Tuesday night, and that was it. I didn't ask. You just told me, no, yeah. I couldn't do it. So I'm like, all right.
I'm trying to remember what I was doing, but I don't
Here's what it was. You were hanging out with Ezekiel Elliott. That's the reason why you couldn't remember. You went down to Dallas. You were going to some clubs with Zeke, and you had to punch out some DJs. That's the reason why he's in trouble. You're a bad influence, Howard.
I guess so. Just, boy, he can't seem to stay away from it, can he?
Should the Cowboys – how concerned should the Cowboys be? Because, like, you know, if you look at them individually, they're not awful, but collectively they're starting to show some worrisome signs.
Yeah, no question. When you have a pattern of things, and you would think from his standpoint, he would be trying his damnedest to avoid any potentially tough situations. And that's not the easiest thing to do with these young guys. They like going out. They like doing this. They like doing that. But obviously, these things begin piling up. And you know, the interesting thing is, of course, there had been that report in recent days that the league could end up suspending him as the result of the incident from almost a year ago that could end up in a 1 or 2 game suspension. Now you put this one on it, and I'm sure they'll investigate that. And what I wonder is, if now this will delay any potential suspension that might have been coming until the league gets more information on this, or will they just go ahead with the one suspension? And then, if in fact that's what's going to happen, and then see what occurs with this investigation, and which could lead to a new one at some point. So it's, you know, it's like I said, you just have to be smart, and you think when you start having these things that you're going to just bend over backwards to avoid, like I said, any situation that might end up resulting in a problem. Now, that doesn't mean you can always know when it will, but bottom line is just, you know, a lot of players in this league manage to avoid them. Others seem to be attracted to it. Not attracted is not the right word, but they just seem
to follow them.
Yeah, exactly. And so when that's the situation, you have to be doubly careful.
Yeah, I bounced at a bar for many years, and it always seemed like it was the same couple of knuckleheads that are always causing the problems. And every single time I would talk to them about it, it was never their fault. It's always someone else messing with them. And I'm like, you know what? You're the only common in every single one of these equations. You're the only constant. Everybody else is different. And for some reason, all these different people pick you out of the clear blue sky to mess with. Why is that?
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting because obviously we all know that when you do something as a professional athlete, and whether you actually totally did it or you were around it or involved in it in whatever fashion, it's going to be public, and it's going to be news, and especially when you're a elite player. And so the reality is there's the percentage of players that get involved in stuff is very, very small. And, you know, when you consider right now there's 90 players per team on NFL rosters, and do the math. What's that? Well over 2,700 players. And there's not many, very few, that are getting in trouble. So the huge majority of players find a way to avoid the bad situations. And so, like I said, when they start to pile up, you just got to find a way to just stay away when it seems to be happening.
And the weird thing is with the Dallas Cowboys, like as soon as they start getting good, their players start acting up and they just start getting suspended. You know, you have Ezekiel Elliott who might be getting suspended. You have David Irving who's been suspended for the first 4 games of the year. They've had so many players on the defense suspended for the first part of the season. What is going on down there in Jerry World? As soon as they start getting good, they just start acting up.
Well, actually, Matt, if you look at it, it's not when they start getting good. This has been a pattern over you know, last few years. Now, you know, most of the time they're a pretty good football team. You know, they're very rarely really bad. Once, you know, they get a stinker, you know, like the one a couple seasons ago. But for the most part, they're at least, you know, in contention. A lot of times they're bouncing around. There was several seasons where they were bouncing around 500 or 9-7 or those records. But the reality is just go back and see, you know, whether it was Rolando McClain or Greg Hardy or, you know, DeMarcus Lawrence. I mean, this has been a pattern for years and years for this team. I don't look at it and see it as anything new. Now, you know, that's another thing that Ezekiel Elliott has to look at. Professional athletes have a target. There's no doubt about it. But there's when you're on a certain team, and the Cowboys are certainly targets, maybe you can maybe argue a little bit more than a lot of other teams. But when you know that, you just, like I said, just have to be, you know, really careful. And, you know, that's really been the MO for quite a time for this football team and being affected by these suspensions and guys missing games.
And I think in this upcoming season, Howard, I don't know about you, but I think the Dallas Cowboys are going to take a real step back. I don't think they're going to win nearly as many games as they did last year. They're going to be playing a first-place schedule, and there's going to be more film out on Dak. So, I mean, I think Dak is still going to be good, but I don't think he's going to be nearly as good as what he was last year. And I think the toughest team in the NFC East is going to be the New York Giants. I think they're my team to – they're going to be my team to beat in the NFC next year.
Well, I think the division is pretty good. That's number one. I agree with you on that. And they could take a step back. But, you know, the first place schedule is basically two games of your entire 16. And so while that can certainly have an effect, it's not a huge potential differential. But I think as much as anything, it's a division getting better. And it's been, you know, it was pretty solid last year. I mean, the Giants were a playoff team. The, you know, the Redskins were right there competing for a spot. The Eagles were just a step back, but I think the Eagles are a team to really watch closely, because this was a team last year, when you look at it, they were, even with a rookie quarterback in Carson Wentz, they were 3-1 when Lane Johnson, their excellent right tackle, started serving a 10-game suspension. And during that period, I think they were 3-7 during those 10 games. And they had just a merry-go-round at the right tackle spot. And they just weren't very good. Then Johnson came back for the final two games of the season, and they won them. So when you look at that, they were 5-1 with him, and 2-8, I think it was, or 3-7 without him. And, or maybe 4-1. I'm trying to figure out whatever it was. It was a big, big difference when he wasn't there. And so now that he should be there for the entire season, and they've added some receivers, they added LeGarrette Blount at running back, and I think the Eagles are a team to watch. But the point is that division looks a lot better, and that in itself could certainly affect what happens with the Cowboys.
Staying in the division, Kirk Cousins. His own GM can't even get the name of the player right. But Kirk Cousins, he could not come up with could not meet terms for a long-term contract with the Washington Redskins. So he's going to play a second year on the franchise tag of around $24 million. Why can't they seem to get this guy nailed down? I mean, it's Kirk Cousins. He's a pretty good quarterback, but I mean, he's not someone who should be making, like, you know, too many demands where they can't sign him, can he?
Well, you know, Bruce Allen, as you mentioned, you know, stumbled on his name, but also came out, which was very unusual, and said, hey, and pretty much laid out what they offered him, and then said they didn't get a response from Cousins' people. And I think, and then he essentially acknowledged it and admitted that that was the case. And I think what he's doing is he's betting on himself and figuring that the Redskins will probably not franchise him next year, because if they do, then it'll be a one-year tender of around $34 million.
Wow.
A crazy number like that. And so he probably thinks that the Redskins won't franchise him. And if he does, if they do, well, heck, that's $34 million. Added on to the 40, whatever it is, 43, something like that, 42, 43 that he would have made these 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, add those three numbers together, and you're right at $25 million a year for just 3 years. If they don't franchise him, then he's a free agent. And maybe he rejoins Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, which everyone thinks could very well happen. And then he'll parlay these 2 years at the money he's made onto a new long-term deal with a whole lot of new guaranteed money, and he comes out smelling like a rose. Now, if he doesn't play as well, then that could be an issue. But I think from Kyle Shanahan's standpoint, I don't know that he'll care if he don't play that well, because we know that Pierre Garçon's not there for them. We know that DeSean Jackson isn't there, and Shanahan knows him very well when he was with the Redskins. And so I think that he'll probably look at it and say, well, so be it. Okay, struggled. Team wasn't as good around him. We'll put the team around him, and this is going to be our guy for a long term. I'm not saying that will happen, but I think what Cousins is looking at is the strong possibility that it will. And if he's a free agent, somebody is going to pay him very good money, which could end up being the Redskins.
Yeah.
So I think almost unless he just tanks it totally, then he'll probably come out smelling like a rose.
And I'll tell you what, I don't know about you, Howard. I love when a player does that, when just kind of bets on himself. You saw Joe Flacco do that a few years ago.
Yeah.
Where he's like, yeah, you know what? I'm not going to sign that offer. Go ahead and franchise me, and then we'll talk about it when the season's over. And then he goes out and he wins the Super Bowl. I mean, I kind of like when players do that.
Yeah. And especially when the money is what it is right now, and with the new rule of franchise players, and I don't think with the new rules, if you're franchised for that third time, then the franchise tag just gets exorbitant, much higher than it used to be. And so with those new rules, it's created a situation where he knows, and I'll tell you, a lot of times it really is better for the player if he rolls the dice to keep playing on the franchise tag, because it keeps going up. It's guaranteed once you sign it. And as long as you keep playing well and don't get injured, then you're going to keep, making the big money. So it definitely makes sense to do it that way if the player has the guts to do it. And I give Cousins credit. I mean, he had signed the tender a while ago, so he didn't stay away from, off-season workouts. He didn't stay away from minicamp and all those things like a lot of guys under the franchise tag do. And so he didn't lose out on any of that important work that's done in the off season. And obviously he'll be in training camp on time and be, committed to playing as best as he can.
Howard Balzer joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. And that 721 means that his birthday is July 21st. That's 3 days away. He will expect a present, Giamatti, just so you know. Now that you know when Balzer's birthday is, he is going to expect a present. Don't let him down. Talking about free agency, Howard, Le'Veon Bell, he is, playing on the franchise tag too, and he cannot get to terms with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Do you think that he is going to hold out of training camp?
Maybe for a little bit, and for the first couple of weeks, and especially for a running back, and the first couple of weeks aren't that important. But what he does have to be mindful of, remember, he is coming back from an injury, which everyone says he's healthy. And so you do want to make sure, though, that when you get to camp, or whenever you report, that you're not going to be in danger of getting an injury. And we know that we've seen that happen in the past. When guys miss a certain amount of time, a lot of times they come in and get injured. And that's the one thing that could really impact him going forward into next year, aside from production, is that he has had, some of these groin injuries and things like that, knee, over the last couple of seasons. And so I would think, like I said, maybe you miss a little bit of time, but I don't think it'll be a whole lot. Running backs don't play much in preseason games anyway, and so it wouldn't take him very long to really get into playing shape. And so, I think you do want to get there, and even if you're not practicing a lot and doing all that stuff, and let's be honest, training camps aren't that hard anymore, it probably would be best for him to do that, because I don't think, his franchise tag, if they would do it again next year, would be $14.5 million. And what's interesting is, LeSean McCoy is the highest paid running back in the NFL on a contract that's valued at $8 million a year. Well, Bell's making 12 this year. So that's obviously higher than what McCoy's average is. And so I don't think the Steelers will franchise him at that level next year. And he'll probably end up being a free agent. And he's still relatively young by any standards, much less a running back standards. So it does behoove him, though, to be in there, to get in there and not have, and hopefully not have injuries so he can really hit as a free agent. Although even hitting as a free agent, it's not going to be huge because teams just don't pay that huge money for running backs because they know the risk that there is at that position. And so he makes the big money this year and then he'll be a free agent. And even if he gets that $8 or $9 million average, depending on the guarantees, he's come out pretty well.
Which is a shame because when Le'Veon Bell is healthy, man, he is such a weapon back there because not only is he good in the backfield, but he can catch passes out of the backfield as well. He's kind of like a complete player. And he's got great speed. He's not going to be one of those backs that's going to run you over. He's more of a breakaway. He's got more breakaway speed than he has power. But, I mean, when he's healthy, man, he's just such a weapon. I would really, if I'm a Steelers fan, I would really hate to lose him.
Oh, no question about it. And we've seen how what happens to Steelers in those key games when he is missed because of injury. And so even though, like you said, he's not a pure power back, he does have some power and strength to him. And that running style with that pause and all that, I've never seen a running back do that and be as patient and as successful as you know, doing that and just kind of hanging out and waiting and seeing, okay, I'm going to go here, and boom, he's gone and comes up with, you know, with big yardage. So there's no doubt, as good as Roethlisberger is, as obviously amazing that Antonio Brown is, as much as they're hopeful that Martavis Bryant can stay on the right path and what he can contribute to that offense, certainly that passing game, a big factor in it being as successful as it is because of Le'Veon Bell being back there. And if he's not, they don't really have anyone that is close to being and being able to produce at the level that he can.
Do you have any idea why the Carolina Panthers yesterday released general manager Dave Gettleman? I mean, it seems kind of like an odd time to do it.
Very odd time. Almost as odd as whenever it was several weeks ago when the Chiefs fired John Dorsey, their general manager. And what normally happens in these things, everybody speculates, everybody wonders, no one really says or reveals what it is. But the overriding thing that I've heard on both of these is that some of it has been traced to contract negotiations and what has happened with certain players. In Kansas City, it was Clark Hunt, the owner, who essentially stepped in last year and got Eric Berry signed to the contract that he did. And right now, the Panthers are experiencing issues with both tight end Greg Olsen, who wants a new contract, and linebacker Thomas Davis. And Gettleman was just playing the hard ass, if I can say that, on 590.
You can.
And basically just playing hardball with those guys. And Jerry, and so the speculation is that Jerry Richardson didn't like that. And so what'll be interesting is if we do see new contracts, you know, coming up in the next whatever, several weeks or whenever, for those two players. And so a lot of people believe that could be what it is, because overall, obviously, both Dorsey and Gettleman have done excellent jobs in acquiring talent for those two teams since they've been there.
I would imagine a lot of people in Carolina, too, like within the organization, weren't happy that Josh Norman was basically shown the door, too.
That's it. Yeah, very good point there, too. And that was one that, you know, last year they were playing hardball in those negotiations and then all of a sudden decided to remove the franchise tag. And he ended up getting the big deal, and that was pretty late in the process too. And obviously signed the big contract with the Redskins. So that's a good point that it's been something that's kind of built over time. And the Panthers really struggled defensively last year because of that decision with Josh Norman, with playing a bunch of young players in the secondary, and had obviously a lot of other reasons too, Cam Newton's injuries and other things, but certainly. Those defensive issues were certainly a significant factor in the Panthers going from a Super Bowl team to having a record of 6-10.
Howard, the hard-ass balls are joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. Howard, last night we had Daniel Kaplan on, your friend Daniel Kaplan from the Sports Business Journal, and I asked him about the Rams wanting to move the lawsuit from court into arbitration, and I asked him if he thought that was going to be that was going to happen, and he said no, he didn't think that they were going to move to arbitration. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think it's going to stay in the court, or do you think that the Rams are going to get their way, they're going to go to arbitration?
I would agree with Daniel on it. Obviously, you can never totally predict what will happen when decisions are made like this. And certainly, if you're the Rams, you know, hey, we all hate them, but yet from a business standpoint, you understand why they're trying to do that, because they want as friendly a court as possible. And obviously, also not only court, they want to avoid court, so that a lot. Because obviously, it's a pretty good. You know, a pretty big clue to what they're doing is because they don't want discovery. You know, they don't want a lot of the things that we know are going to be made public come out that very few people nationally have really seen, mainly because they've refused to look at it. We all know. You know, we all know the background and the stories and the dirty stuff behind the scenes. And the Rams know it too, but they don't want it to be public in a courtroom or a public forum, and so they're trying to avoid that. But if they can't, hey, you know, pay the piper, because I think at some point there very well might be a settlement in all this. Although I hope St. Louis doesn't, but you know, we'll see how it all plays out. But yeah, I would agree with Daniel that there's no reason why something like this should go to arbitration. Lawsuit's been filed. You know, go the normal route that these things do.
And I don't understand, like, what grounds they can get an arbiter to weigh in on anyway. I mean, like, for what? Because the lease went into arbitration? The lease is over. You're no longer on the lease. The lease is done. You're in Los Angeles now, so I don't understand why they think they're going to get an arbiter on this.
Well, that's a real good point, and one that's, you know, a major part of it is saying, well, terms in the lease. Well, yeah, you can't have it.
What lease? The lease with what?
Even if you would argue that there was a lease when they left, that lease was year to year, and obviously it was over.
Yeah, it's over now.
Now you can argue that during the process and everything that was going on, there was a lease, but you know there isn't. And the Rams, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too, and be able to go year to year and then have the lease end and try to, you know, get things that were in that lease beforehand. You know, the one of the most ironic parts of all this that I've always felt, and I'd love to see. The St. Louis people throw this one into the equation also, just to show the way the Rams do business. Because of course we all know that the Rams all along were claiming, you know, that St. Louis breached the lease, and you know, by not agreeing to the renovations to the dome. Well, no, they didn't. That was in the lease that they were allowed to do that. So you can't breach a lease that gives you the ability.
I was arguing with someone on Twitter about that a couple days ago. They said, well, right. St. Louis broke the lease. I'm like, they did not break the lease. I'm like, I don't know how many times I got to explain to you people out in Los Angeles what the terms of the lease were.
Right. And the other point I was going to make is that it was, which is often forgotten, which I made the point many times during that crazy year when we were going through this on a daily and weekly basis, is that if there was anyone who breached and broke the lease that existed, it was the Rams back when they tried to play a game a year in London, which was an absolute and blatant violation of the lease, which called for the Rams to play all their home games in, you know, in the dome. And so they announced this without even talking to anybody from the CVC and going, hey, you know, we have this opportunity. Can we work something out? And da da da. They never did that. They just announced that they were doing it. So that's why I was saying I was hoping St. Louis, you know, St. Louis people in the lawsuit would just, you know, put that in it. Again, it's not that relevant to this issue, mm-hmm. but it shows the way the Rams do business and want it both ways. They claim that someone, you know, breached the lease, but they were the ones that blatantly breached it with the whole effort to play those games in London back, you know, whenever it was, 2010, 2011, whenever it was.
You said that you hope that they don't settle, but what figure do you think out there would make the city settle? Do you think it would be $40 million, or you think it would be higher than that, lower than that? What do you think?
I don't think they should settle, because to me, in this, you're talking about, if you really believe you have a good case, and I, you know, granted, some will say that I'm biased, but I think anyone who would look at this and look at all the facts would say they could have a pretty good case. And so this is antitrust. And so any damage, you know, aside from the, you know, let's just say for minimum that they have to pay back the money that St. Louis spent. Well, if you show that there was fraud and lying and deceit and all that, well, that $16 million gets trebled under antitrust law. So that's a minimum of $48 million right there. But if a jury would award punitive damages for their actions, and let's remember, punitive damages are set up in court cases as, oh, what's the word, as warning, as a result that tells companies or tells people, you cannot act this way. And so they hit them hard so they wouldn't do something like that again.
A deterrent.
Oh, no, I mean, punitive damages could be humongous. Humongous. You know, if I'm St. Louis, you know what I'm holding out for? I don't care about the money. If I'm St. Louis people, I'm saying, okay, you know, here's what we'll settle for. You promise us a team.
Yeah. I would love for that to happen too, but man, I don't know if they can strong arm. I don't think they can strong arm the NFL into that. What I'm kind of hoping for is that they're going to get enough money out of Stan Kroenke to pay for an MLS stadium. How great would that be?
Well, that would be. I mean, what I'm saying is, you never know, obviously, but punitive damages and things like this could be in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Absolutely.
And is the league and Stan Kroenke and other teams going to want to pay that? I don't think so. Now, of course, even if they won, then they can file an appeal, and this can go on for a long, long time. But hey, make it go away. Yeah, we can make it go away. You know, hey, we want money and a new, you know, and a team to replace to put a team in St. Louis, and let's see what happens.
Howard, we appreciate your time as always, sir, and have a very happy early birthday.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Howard. That is Howard Balzer from BalzerFootball.com and the Hall of Fame show on the NFL channel on SiriusXM. You can follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. Let's take a commercial break. You're listening to That 590 Show right here on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com.